This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Follow us on social medias and get us wherever you get your podcasts from. Today, we are talking about the recent attacks on reproductive freedom. It's scary. I'm seeing people all over social media that are really quite afraid by some of these legislations that are getting passed. So I wanted to bring in an expert here today to talk about things. She's been on the show once before, but welcome back, Roxanne Stocky.
Hi, thank you for having me, Heather.
So what's your position? You're with the Cherry Hill Women's Center.
Yeah, so I work as the Director of Community Engagement for the Women's Centers, and we're a group of independent abortion providers. We have 5 clinics in 4 states. So our Cherry Hill Women's Center is located in Camden County in New Jersey. Then we have 2 centers in PA, 1 in Connecticut, and 1 in Atlanta, Georgia.
So the one in Georgia specifically is a little concerning.
Yeah, they've been keeping us busy, right? So we've seen, you know, over the last couple of weeks, at least 6 states pass 6-week bans, and some, you know, states passing even more troubling bans. Alabama passing, you know, a ban on almost all abortions, and also criminalizing physicians who would do the procedure. With that ban, we also saw that there was no exceptions for rape, incest, a lot of the provisions that we normally see even in really hostile abortion states.
And specifically, what's in the ones in Georgia that are affecting you guys?
Yeah, so Georgia passed also a nearly total ban on abortion, an abortion ban at 6 weeks gestation. So when we're saying 6 weeks gestation ban, really that's about 4 weeks from the time someone would have conceived the pregnancy, and at most 2 weeks from the point when someone would have missed their first period.
All right, so you probably don't even know that you're pregnant at this point in time.
Right, and we're talking about, you know, states in the South where a lot of folks are actually having to travel a great distance to be able to access their abortions. Over, you know, since 2010, we've seen over 300 abortion bans targeting abortion providers that have caused a lot of independent abortion providers and Planned Parenthood affiliate providers to have to close. So we have a landscape of abortion that's considered like an abortion desert in a lot of parts of the South. So to imagine having just to find out that you are pregnant and schedule and actually make it to an appointment within that 6-week time frame is almost unheard of for,
because really it's like a 2-week time frame, you know, you've missed your period, you take a test, you know, that probably takes a couple of days, so like, you know, this is down to like maybe a week and a half you'd have to get into one of these facilities, right?
Assuming your period's really normal, you're not taking any medications or exercising, you know, out of the usual that we know can throw these things off.
Right, I personally have polycystic ovaries, so I might miss an entire month, you know.
Same. Yeah.
And I don't think that's uncommon for women, like, you know, most people women don't have that exact 28 day unless you're taking some kind of medication to regulate it.
Right. And birth control is one of the medications that does happen to cause a lot of these, you know, interruptions in menstrual periods. So it's definitely a strategic, you know, effort to not just criminalize abortion, but really to make it inaccessible. And this is what we've seen over and over again historically, is when, you know, the government hasn't been able to eliminate abortion access legally, they've been able to pass restrictions to make the procedure, you know, inaccessible. Unfortunately, those types of restrictions don't impact people who have a lot of means. You know, rich white women will always be able to travel to New York and have an abortion, stay on an extended vacation, you know, and take the time they need to have the procedure. Whereas people who aren't able to take another day off of work, find childcare for their kids, pull together the money, you know, that they need to afford this medical care, are not going to be able to navigate, you know, these mounting restrictions.
And now Texas actually has made it illegal to even leave the state, right? Or that's being debated. Is it not actually signed yet?
So there, you know, it's important to note that right now, abortion is still legal in all 50 states. This is something that we've had a lot of people reaching out to us to ask us questions about. You know, patients are really afraid that they're going to come in for their appointments and not be able to be seen or be turned away. So right now, none of these bans that are essentially unconstitutional have been upheld. But there also, you know, is no there are no bans right now that would restrict someone from leaving their home state to go to another state for an abortion. It's kind of in, you know, states can regulate abortion to a particular extent. From the 1992 case Planned Parenthood versus Casey, they can work to try to persuade women to continue a pregnancy as long as it doesn't cause them an undue burden. So what will be finding out next is if a state completely restricts abortion access, like we may anticipate seeing now in Missouri as early as the end of the week, does that pose now an undue burden for someone to have to leave the state, potentially driving upwards of 4, 5, 6 hours to their closest clinic? But just like marijuana legalization, there's still protections on the federal level, and states are not able to penalize their residents for what they do out of state in a state where it's legal.
And so that would actually...
we don't see those kind of, you know, although...
Even if they try to pass them, they're not going to be upheld.
Yeah, I don't anticipate seeing that kind of far-reaching oversight being possible. Although, I think it really does lend to, kind of the fear-mongering that's happening and the climate of criminality around abortion that makes people, you know, fear whether or not they can access this care, but also kind of creates a, you know, stigmatization and a value judgment coming from this authority of the government to say what you're doing is wrong, what you're doing is bad, and we're imposing these laws because of it.
Right. Now, have you heard, I think I was reading a Facebook article that, what was it, the Satanic Temple is actually suing Missouri over these laws that may be signed in by the end of the week, that it's in violation of their religious freedom.
Yeah, the first time that I came into contact with information about the Satanic Temple as it relates to abortion was a challenge on a trap law of a mandated consent and waiting period ban that they were challenging. And I think that they're doing a really good job at kind of drawing attention to the way that the government right now is trying to ingrain certain religious beliefs or doctrines into government that would rule all people, right? So the Satanic Temple has held that, you know, it is their religious belief and their right to have access to scientifically accurate medical care, and that these types of laws that are based in, you know, a Christian fundamental belief structure actually violate the individual's religious protections. I don't think that we've seen them held, but I do think that they're doing a really good job at kind of changing some of the narratives in the conversation around abortion.
So let's say some of these laws do get signed into law. Will they go to the Supreme Court, likely? And is there, I know there's the fear, but what is the likelihood of Roe versus Wade getting overturned on the Supreme Court level?
Yeah, I mentioned a little while ago about the 1992 case out of Pennsylvania, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And this was one of the first times that we saw a lot of restrictions on abortion, these trap laws, 24-hour waiting periods, parental consent. There was even a spousal consent in that initial bill. And the anticipation was that it would go to the Supreme Court and that we had a majority Supreme Court justices, promoted by Republican presidents, and that Roe would be overturned. And in that case, obviously, we did not see Roe being overturned, although we saw it gutted. So that Planned Parenthood versus Casey Act allowed states to start to pass a lot of these restrictions that have led us to where we are, you know, today. Unfortunately, the makeup of the Supreme Court has continued to shift, and with President Trump, with him having appointed Justice Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, we now see potentially a Supreme Court that would rule against Roe versus Wade. So all of these bans that are popping up, it's not by accident. It's a coordinated effort to try to undermine the protections of Roe versus Wade. So what we can anticipate is, you know, legal groups, Planned Parenthood affiliates, ACLU, Center for Reproductive Rights are going to be challenging these laws in different states. we likely will see a lot of them halted. We'll see some injunctions, and then we're going to see the lower court start to play out. We could anticipate one of these going all the way to the Supreme Court. I think it's still a little too early to say which one.
Right.
But it kind of feels like everyone's racing and like vying to be that that case and to see who can pass the most extreme ban. Unfortunately, in the meantime, there's a lot of people who are going to be caught up in that wake. And, you know, it's unfortunate and it's really bad for patient healthcare access.
So what can people do that you're feeling scared and you want to do something? And I think everyone automatically thinks of, well, I'll donate to Planned Parenthood, which is fine because, you know, they may be taking these court cases, you know, to the Supreme Court. But there's a lot you can do locally, grassroots. Like, we need help here in New Jersey, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned before that we're an independent abortion provider. Planned Parenthood affiliates and independent abortion providers make up the majority of facilities that provide abortion care in the United States. Independent abortion providers seeing about 3 out of every 5 people who have an abortion. So my biggest suggestion, whether you're in New Jersey or not, is to find out who your local independent provider is and find out what support they need. So there's an organization, the Abortion Care Network, and it's a network of all of these indies. We call ourselves our independent abortion providers across the United States. And you can see a list of who can take donations, who can take volunteers, where they're located. I would take a look at some of these states, you know, Ohio, Mississippi, Kentucky, Iowa, North Dakota, Georgia, and see, you know, who the providers are in those states and what their needs are. Another suggestion is to reach out to your local abortion funds. So abortion funds are organizations, usually nonprofits, that raise money to help bridge the gap between patients who are struggling to afford an abortion and the cost they need to access care. They also sometimes provide logistical support, so transportation, housing, childcare, some of the biggest, you know, boundaries that people face when they're accessing abortion. Your independent abortion provider, your local abortion fund also likely need volunteers. So right here, I will say in New Jersey at our Cherry Hill Women's Center, we've seen a big influx in volunteer applications, which is awesome. We will be hosting our next volunteer training on Thursday, June the 29th. And so if you're interested, sorry, that's Thursday, June the 27th.
Okay.
And if you're interested, you can actually just go right to our website and we have a take action page where you can complete an application to become a volunteer. You can make a donation and you can sign up on our mailing list. Your local abortion provider is going to be very well for urgent needs that are facing community members or providers in your state.
So people might be acting as escorts. They might be helping with clerical stuff at the facility, things like that.
Yeah, primarily volunteers at the women's centers help out with clinic escorting. And so for those of you who are not familiar with that, that is physically walking people in and out of the facility. You know, the recent few years, we've seen an increase in anti-abortion rhetoric coming from the current administration, coming from news outlets, and that has really incited a lot of people to start coming out and being a little bit more aggressive, coming out in bigger numbers outside of the healthcare facilities that provide abortion. So, you know, just being a really kind face, a soft barrier between patients accessing healthcare and, you know, the protests that are happening outside is a really important action to help ensure that, you know, abortion care is not just safe and legal, but also dignified.
Yeah. And I was hearing from somebody I know who sometimes volunteers that the amount of protesters are seeing has exponentially increased of late. Like, you know, before they may be acting as a volunteer and not see any protesters on some days. And now pretty much every day you have protesters out there, right?
Yeah. So they're coming in more frequently in bigger numbers. Some of the rhetoric that we're hearing from them is a lot more, it's a lot more harsh. Yeah, we have an excellent team of clinic escort volunteers, and they really, you know, help us out by being the eyes and the ears outside of the facility and also just making sure that people know that they're well supported.
Yeah, I think that's great.
We've also, we know based on the most recent National Abortion Federation violence and disruption statistics that our center is not alone in seeing an increase in these types of protests. Unfortunately, you know, picketing outside of facilities, harassing male, targeting of abortion providers and staff in person and online has increased substantially over the last several years.
So let's say the worst thing happened and Roe was overturned. What does that mean for women in New Jersey and throughout the country?
There are a handful of states that have protections should Roe be overturned. These are states that have abortion access ingrained into their state constitutions. New Jersey has very strong protections for abortion, but we don't currently have that type of state constitutional protection. So that's something that, you know, advocates that are working on the ground are starting to think about what that might look like and how we can further invest in the abortion infrastructure in New Jersey, which is a state where we would anticipate, even if Roe were overturned, people could still access abortion. We're a state that some people are starting to call a haven state, and that's somewhere where, you know, Georgia falls, if Alabama goes, Mississippi goes, where people could potentially be traveling to access their abortion care. This is something we already see. Cherry Hill Women's Center cares for a lot of patients every day that are coming from out of state, but we could anticipate an increase in that.
So what would something like that, if it was ingrained into the state constitution, look like? Are people working on these bills currently? Are there people we should be calling?
So right now, I'm really excited to say we actually have been working with a wide variety of organizations throughout the state on a re-envisioned and kind of re-energized reproductive health coalition called Right to Thrive New Jersey, going by just Thrive NJ. And our coalition right now is currently working on looking at the maternal mortality bills that are passing. We're trying to, you know, shore up and move some bills that have just been kind of sitting around in the state house across the line, but we are envisioning what a longer term roadmap for, you know, really strong reproductive health policy in New Jersey. And the codification of Roe is definitely something that's on the table.
All right. But there's no actual bills numbers yet or anything like that. But.
Not yet. Right now, though, there is a bill that we anticipate seeing cross the line soon, which is a bill that is a provider confidentiality bill. And what that would do is would allow reproductive health providers and patients to utilize the current DHS address confidentiality program to ensure that, you know, if we do need to seek assistance from a police department, you know, during some of these protests, or if there were a clinic invasion or other kind of issue at the center, that we would be able to do so confidentially and safely.
Okay. So basically the police wouldn't get access to patient information even if there was an incident there, is that?
Or protesters. Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, we've seen protesters at our center recording 911 calls and then publicly posting the name of the person that called, have seen anti-abortion extremists, you know, searching out the information so that they can target providers at home.
Oh, okay. Are they actually doxing patients yet? Or is that...
That's not something that we have seen. I think abortion providers and reproductive healthcare providers in general do a really good job at protecting patient privacy. We also do have a lot of systems in place, you know, if the police were to be called to try to, you know, make sure that everyone involved is being safe. But this would be really a protection above and beyond that to ensure that, you know, this wouldn't be that type of issue.
And I'm assuming that's likely going to pass once we're not seeing a lot of opposition to that, are we?
Yeah, we're working on a concurrence vote right now. So it should be back through the Senate shortly, but it's passed both houses and it'll be heading to the governor's desk to sign.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear.
I had bipartisan support. So, you know, I think, like I said, you know, investing in that abortion infrastructure means, you know, protecting and expanding abortion access. So we should be looking at, you know, what are restrictions, you know, for insurance coverage? How can we expand Medicaid insurance to cover more people in our state to ensure that everyone that is in need can access the healthcare services that they are looking for?
What percentage of people, and it's okay if you don't know the number here, but what percentage of people need some sort of supplemental help to get either through an abortion fund or through Medicaid or whatever to be able to access this medical care?
I don't know the exact percentage, but I do know that folks that have to pay, you know, for care out of pocket oftentimes face unnecessary delays to accessing their care. In addition to serving with the Cherry Hill Women's Center, work on the board of the New Jersey Abortion Access Fund. So we fundraise and give grants, you know, directly to patients in need of accessing services. And we, you know, do provide funding for hundreds of patients in the state of New Jersey every year. We try to help as many people as we possibly can, but there definitely is gaps there.
Yeah, and something I believe you were talking about last time you were here was something called chasing the fee, where when you're trying to save up that money, then the procedure gets more expensive as you have to wait longer into the term.
Right. Some of the things that I think are most frustrating about these 6-week bans are that they assume that everyone, you know, right now as it stands, can have an abortion at the moment that they've made that decision. And the same people that are pushing to ban abortions and to restrict access have already created an environment that means that people with limited resources aren't able to access an abortion quickly and, you know, when they're ready to make that decision or, you know, necessarily in their communities.
Yeah, I think I saw a statistic not fairly recently that most people could not meet a $400 emergency.
Right. And abortion, unlike other medical services, you know, abortion providers have kept their fees relatively low. So I think the cost of an abortion in like 1980 was around $350. Today, you're looking at around $450 to $500 for a first trimester procedure in like an outpatient ambulatory surgical center facility. You know, so abortion providers really are trying to do their best to make sure that services are available to people that need them when they need them, that they are affordable. And, you know, definitely can use the support of community members that, you know, want to make sure that these services are protected.
So people can reach out, they can donate, they can contact their legislators about shoring up anything else that people can do if they're looking, if they're feeling scared and feel like they need to do something. You know, I'm seeing this fear, which I think people feel fear can immobilize you. So if we can give them courses of action, if these are what you can do, this is how you can make sure reproductive services are available for everyone. That gives them power.
Yeah, I think that especially in New Jersey, making sure that the legislators that are doing a good job on abortion access know that people are paying attention is really important. So we have a lot of legislators that maybe fundamentally believe in abortion access and abortion rights, but don't have the language or don't feel confident, you know, in their ability or their place to speak up. So knowing that their constituents feel that this is a priority issue for them is very important. Very recently, we had 3 legislators in New Jersey sign on to a statement condemning some of these bans, you know, sweeping across the southern United States. We saw Assemblypeople Raj Mukherjee, Assemblywoman Valerie Venieri Huddle, and Senator Weinberg sign on to a letter, you know, really condemning these bans and stating their commitment to protecting and expanding abortion access in the state of New Jersey. So I think that targeting those legislators and letting them know that you appreciate their work. And if your legislator is not on that list, you know, questioning why not. If there's someone who expresses progressive values, finding out, you know, if abortion is one of those and if they do, you know, propose to support abortion, one thing that they can ask of their legislators to do is join something called the Reproductive Freedom Leadership Collective. And that is a group of legislators that come together to learn about abortion access, learn how to speak about abortion access, and really stand together across the United States to push back on some of this.
Okay, that's not just a New Jersey-specific coalition. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So that sounds like a lot of courses of action. You know, you don't donating to Planned Parenthood's good, but that's kind of, you know, you're just writing a check and you kind of forget about it. If you can actually get ingrained, the more people in the streets fighting and protecting these rights for everyone, the better the outcomes will be. And, you know, even if nothing gets to the Supreme Court, Roe stays in place. There's still people that need help right here in New Jersey that, you know, can use all these people are getting mobilized and want to do stuff, there's a place for them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would encourage anyone that's interested in getting involved is welcome to reach out to me either by my office phone or email, which I'm sure that Heather could post along with this podcast if people can plug in. Or you can always, again, plug into that Take Action page on our website, and we'll keep you up to date.
And I remember last year when you were here, there was some sort of taco challenge. Are you guys doing that again this year?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know when that's going to happen?
Yeah. So through the month of August, the New Jersey Abortion Access Fund will be welcoming people to eat a taco, drink a beer, and donate to their local abortion fund. So this is a coordinated effort through the National Network of Abortion Funds, and people engage in this taco beer challenge all across the United States all through the month of August. So this year, New Jersey Abortion Access Fund is encouraging people on their own or with a group to have your meal, you know, have your bevy, and then become a sustaining donor to NJAF. So this is something that's a little bit newer for us.
Okay.
It really, you know, is helpful to make a one-time donation to your local abortion fund, but sustaining donors give a meaningful donation every month, some as small as $5. And that really helps to make sure that we have, you know, money that we can count on that's coming in, especially as we anticipate potentially seeing an increase in the number of patients that will, you know, will require our assistance.
Right. And this is a lot more fun than dumping a bucket of ice on your head or some of the other challenges.
Yes, absolutely. Anything that involves food, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah, we actually went for the Green Party for a while. We had a local Mexican restaurant that we were calling the South Jersey Green Party like office, that we always would go there. It's like, oh, well, let's go there and have, you know, film something.
We just wrapped up our recent bowl-a-thon efforts, and I did a little mini challenge where for every donation I got in 24 hours, I was going to eat a White Castle cheeseburger. So just this past week, I had to eat 10 White Castle burgers. But, you know, sometimes you have to make light of things. You know, my sister was saying you got to laugh, not to cry, because right now, you know, things are really serious and, you know, folks should be concerned. You know, folks should be concerned 5 years ago, 10 years ago. We've been on a really slippery slope of losing, you know, our reproductive rights and losing access to abortion care. And right now is definitely a critical time to plug in.
And I think the key takeaway is that abortions are still legal and provided in every state, that it's, you know, you're hearing some of these scary things, but that does not mean that abortions are illegal. That doesn't mean you're going to get arrested. Right now, at this point in time, every state still has an abortion, like it's legal, and just some have ridiculous restrictions that we need to try to push back against. And
yeah, there's excellent legal minds and, you know, courageous legislators that are pushing forward to ensure that, you know, abortion remains legal. But in the meantime, you know, folks can tap into their local independent abortion provider, their local abortion fund, you know, to get the care and the practical support that they need to access it.
And don't get scared and start saying, oh, I need to move to another country. You know, let's stay here. Let's fight. You know, we don't quite need to, you know, escape to Canada yet or whatever country people are, you know, thinking that they're going to run away to. Yeah. Like, I've seen that on Facebook, that women are getting scared.
Yeah, I have too. And I also have seen, you know, from the opposition, kind of the statement of, well, just move, you know, but who is that not taking into account? People that really don't have the resources or, you know, the family or anything to just get up and leave. So I would say if you feel like you have the resources, you know, to up and leave to somewhere, you know, more progressive and you can, you know, hunker down and, you know, stand up and fight back against
some of those resources to help fund abortions here, exactly. Right in the state of New Jersey or whatever state you're in. Right. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Too. It's always so much fun. Do you have any closing words or things that you want to say before we call it a day?
I would just say that, you know, it's really frightening to see, you know, the aggressive pushback and rollback of these reproductive health access and reproductive rights, especially, you know, at a time when we know that maternal mortality, infant mortality in the United States is the highest of any industrialized country. So there's really a kind of hypocrisy that I'd like to kind of bring attention to, and some of the states that are passing these laws tend to be the highest on the list of maternal and infant mortality.
Right. Well, you know, it does seem very it's connected, right? That mm-hmm. attacks on, you know, people that are able to conceive children are across the board. You know, they try to target the marginalized, the powerless, you know, and that's what they're doing here again. This is just part of a long history of attacks, and they're not going to stop, but we can fight them back.
Yeah. And New Jersey, you know, we may be in a fairly good place when it comes to abortion access, but we do have one of the highest racial disparities in maternal mortality.
Yes.
So if, you know, folks are already getting on the phone and contacting their legislatures, one of the bills in the maternal mortality package is having a little bit of trouble moving. And it's a bill that would require Medicaid coverage for 365 days after someone delivers a child. So right now, the standard is 60 days, but we know that that leaves people without critical healthcare services at a time when they're most vulnerable. So in order to, you know, make sure that parents in our state, you know, have the best outcomes, we really should be pushing, you know, for that bill. It is priceless.
It does. Yeah. You can't put a price tag on people's lives.
No. And if they're looking for a place to access those funds, we're also pushing people to contact their legislators about advancing the millionaire's tax.
Yes. We're a big fan of taxing millionaires until they bleed here on NJR. Because we are anti-capitalists. So watching all these oligarchs fight over not having to contribute to society is really annoying.
So, yeah. You know. Yep. And it's really frustrating when those are the same class of people who will always have access to abortion. Yet, you know, people are scrounging to be able just to, you know, access the most minimal basic healthcare services.
Right. Oh, thanks again for being here. You know, you're welcome back anytime here. I love talking to you. And these are important subjects. Hopefully my audience is a little less scared and a little more knowledgeable now. And you can take this information and go forward and make change in your local municipalities. And that's how you start change for the entire world. We're so glad to have you guys here as listeners for New Jersey Revolution Radio. We would not be here without you guys. We're here to be the voice of the activist community. For that end, we take no corporate money. We are supported entirely by small donations from you guys. Even if, you know, you can sign on to that website, www.njrevolutionradio.com, contribute, click on the donate button. Like Roxanne said, even $5 a month really does help keep us on the air. Our expenses aren't super high here, but we do have expenses every month. So if you guys can contribute even the littlest bit, it really helps us. We appreciate you more than you know. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.